The Capital Confidential podcast is brought to you by the Times Union, the leading newspaper in New York's Capital Region. Subscribe today or visit online at timesunion.com.
On June 14th, heading into the weekend before the final 3 days of the legislative session, Senator Luis Sepulveda was hopeful that a bill enabling undocumented immigrants to apply for driver's licenses would receive a vote in his chamber. The proposal had already passed the Assembly that week, and he claimed the private conversations among Senate Democrats were heading in the right direction. But when I grabbed him in the hallway of the Capitol that day, the Bronx Democrat said, quote, "I can't say we have the votes yet." He did note that Senate Majority Leader Andrea Stewart-Cousins was in the process of whipping votes. Quote, "I certainly feel better today than I did 24 hours ago," Sepulveda added. Less than 72 hours later, the Senate was taking up the bill, and Stewart-Cousins was remarking on the passage of the legislation.
Thank Senator Sepulveda, because he and I never knew how long it would take to get to this moment. I remember when you were in the Assembly, Senator, with Assemblyman Crespo before Catalina got there. And I remember there was that dance between the Assembly and the Senate, and you guys aren't for real, and we are, and blah, blah, and you know how that is. And I don't know whether you ever thought that the Senate would ever do the things that you expected us to do. But when the opportunity presented itself, you came over anyway. And now here we are.
On this episode of the Capital Confidential podcast, I talked with Senator Sepulveda about one of the year's most unlikely new laws.
You want to deport an undocumented person? Start with me, because I'm an undocumented person.
How do we beat him in an election?
We will. I'm going to run against him.
I wish you would.
There are things in here that are unobjectionable because they're not that effective. So yeah, sure, I'll vote for a distinctive license plate. Sure, why not?
Jim, you had your press conference at 4 o'clock.
You're having a press conference now?
That's right, I'm having a press conference.
Well, is this your space here or is it public?
No, it's my space.
Oh, this is your space.
Don't interrupt.
Okay. I'm David Lombardo, and this is the Capital Confidential Podcast. The Green Light Bill had a lot working against it this year in Albany, despite Democratic majorities in both houses of the state legislature. The bill had never passed the Assembly before, let alone the state Senate. It was wildly unpopular with Senate Democrats in the New York City suburbs, and there were signs that Governor Andrew M. Cuomo didn't love the policy quite as much as he said publicly. Despite the odds, Senator Luis Sepulveda, along with Assemblyman Marcus Crespo, successfully shepherded the legislation across the finish line. Sepulveda joined the podcast to explain how it all happened.
In my 30 years in electoral politics and almost 10 years as a legislator, this was probably the most difficult yet the most gratifying experience I had with respect to legislation. People, even though we have a Democratic conference, we know that there's some members who, I mean, we're going to be honest and realistic, we all have to deal with the politics of our legislation. And there were some members, particularly in Long Island, who were concerned about the bill because of the polling numbers that came out at the very beginning. We had meetings with the governor's office, I did anyway, trying to get ways to improve the legislation. We met with the automobile insurance industry. We met with the financial services industry. We met with agricultural businesses. We met with all associations. And, I mean, it was constantly pushback, constantly recitation of poll numbers, but that didn't deter us. With the advocate groups, we had a plan of action that started even before session began. Where we're doing town halls throughout the state and educating people about what the Green Light Bill does and dispel any notions of what it wasn't. And we did this for some time. Within the conference, you know, I did everything possible, talk to my colleagues, to educate my colleagues on the bill. The leader, she, you know, I never knew where we stood until the very last day where she actually put the vote on the floor. I know she was working with the conference to try to drum up the kind of support that was needed. I know it was very difficult for her, and I have to say that she handled it with grace and class and played the long game in such a way that I learned something about how to do things in the future from my experience of working with her. But in the end, we worked so hard. The poll numbers started going in our favor. You know, within the conference and special and private meetings, I brought stats. And if someone would say, well, I don't know about this information, does it really bring down insurance rates? I would bring stats for that. If they talk about safety and vehicular accidents and whatever was attributed to the green light, I'd bring stuff on that. When they asked us about the economics of the bill, I was more than happy to do that. And I was more than happy to argue that with our colleagues on the other side, because generally speaking, Republicans want to talk about the impact of our legislation and policy, how it impacts New York State economy. And here was a bill where other states have demonstrated that, in fact, you know, it was good for the economy. Yeah, it was good for our safety. It was good for insurance rates. Whenever anyone raised any doubts, man, we jumped on that, brought data, brought information. Some of our colleagues, like, for example, Simca Felder, at the very beginning of the conference session, he asked me to give him an information about it because he wasn't yet prepared to opine on the bill and what position he would take. And we flooded his office with information. To his credit, he said that he would vote for it, and he kept his word. And, you know, other colleagues of mine kept their word. But it wasn't easy. It was a struggle. But it was a struggle that taught me a lot about being a legislator and gave me sort of like the framework for future fights on legislation that I know is not popular or will not be popular. But really, if you dot the I's and cross all the T's, and you know you're right about what you're trying to do, you know it's the right thing to do on many levels for the state. I mean, of course, we talk about the economy and safety, but also, you know, those children who I saw that couldn't get to medical appointments because their parents were undocumented and were afraid. You know, those kids who couldn't do extracurricular activities because their parents didn't want to drive vehicles at certain times. This was really mostly for them. And I was very proud to, at the end of the day, that my colleagues and the governor signed a piece of legislation that potentially can impact 750,000 New Yorkers in the future.
So I remember being at a press conference you hosted with the Business Council where they stressed their support for the issue. And I remember that Pete Harcum was there, and he's you know, a white guy from you know, the Westchester County area. And that was, you know, I was a little surprised that he was somebody who's on board because it's a marginal district. You know, he could be competitive. So I'm curious, did that, having somebody like Harcum on board and being publicly very outspoken for this bill, did that have any effect in conference in terms of making other members who might be in similar situations lend their support?
I mean, I can't tell you if it did or didn't. I can tell you that certainly, I mean, not just in this specific legislation, but Pete Harcum is really a profiling courage in this conference because he has taken positions that I know are difficult in his district. But his position is, I'm going to do what's right. And not only him, but Rachel May, you know, up north there, and Jen Metzger.
Right, another tough district.
Yes, they're in tough districts where that bill did not play well, and they all voted in favor of it. So I'm very proud of those three. But certainly it helped with some of the members who are on the fence, I'm sure. I can't quantify it. I can't confirm it. But it makes sense that having a guy like Pete Harcum on your side did help with some colleagues. We were relentless. I mean, I got to tell you that I was relentless. I wish that I could have documented the experience because it was so gratifying. But certainly a lot of you know, there are other people that show courage. It wasn't just him. I think Simca showed courage also.
So the vote itself was taken up by the Assembly in the week before the Senate, and I'm wondering, did that logistically need to happen in order to, you know, get the Senate on board? Did it help, you know, I guess, grease the wheels in any shape or form?
Well, I mean, I think absolutely. You know, when you have one of our chambers, a Democratic body, voting in favor of it, you know, I saw the, I met briefly with the Speaker at an event, and I thanked them because I believe it certainly helped get us to the finish line. It certainly helped prepare me during the debate what their arguments were going to be, because their arguments were basically the same thing. So it helped me in that respect, and it helped us frame how we have to present the issue on the floor. But I am extremely grateful to the Speaker and my Democrats in the Assembly who had the courage to vote for it.
So heading into the weekend before the vote, I actually ran into you right outside the Assembly chamber. You were just running around as you were doing then. And you said you were feeling encouraged by the internal discussions among the Senate Democrats. And so I'm wondering, what was it that happened that weekend that led from encouraged to all of a sudden Monday morning we're having a vote? I mean, what was it that changed?
You know, one of the things that the leader does is she will – with particular pieces of legislation, he sets up either committees or she'll appoint a couple of our colleagues to lead the way on, you know, things like housing or criminal justice. I mean, yeah, you have the chairs of the committees, but sometimes she amplifies that by putting people together, working groups, and then she expects to make a presentation to the entire chamber, to the entire conference. And my opportunity came to make my pitch. And, you know, I have great staff. Sophia Lejeune was my chief of staff. Some great people in the Senate who prepared make me help prepare for a presentation that I did to the chamber, where I just laid it all out, explained the bill. I showed my compassion. You know, my colleagues, I'm sure, at some point were annoyed with me because I was so gung-ho about making sure that this piece of legislation passed. But that presentation, I think, had a lot to do with it. We laid it all out there. We gave every single piece of argument or counter-argument in a way that the only way that you could have been opposed to it was because you were concerned about the politics, or you just outright don't want a green light bill. But it was really, I think, that presentation and the leader working in the background. She's very poker faced. You know, people probably don't know about this, but she doesn't show, even with her own conference and with colleagues that are trying to get things done. And I saw, you know, you see things coming together. You saw the reaction at the end of that particular conference presentation and your discussions with colleagues. And the more discussions you have with your colleagues, the more you see your votes are increasing. And you see people who haven't committed yet or will not sponsor, but you know that these people, these colleagues, their hearts are in the right place and actually care for the issue. We started seeing all this come together. Now, at one point, the governor, we had a last-minute discussion with him where he brought up the issue of facial recognition. I told the governor, we've gone this far. I have sought your office's opinion for some time now. And it's not until now you bring up this issue of facial recognition that we're having some sort of substantive discussion on the bill. But we dispelled, at least I tried to dispel the notion about facial recognition and challenges to the bill, something else that was raised last minute. And, you know, we called the Attorney General's office to find out, to get an opinion on the bill, whether that office, she thought it was constitutional, and whether, you know, whether she would defend it. And it was on the floor while we were debating the speech that, you know, we called her for, we waited for 3 or 4 days. And I was very borderline depressed because I wasn't hearing anything back. The day of the debate, the leader gave us like 2 hours notice. And generally speaking, we get more than that, but she wanted to do this stealth. She wanted to do this quickly. All the arguments were out there. You know, she didn't want to give those who were enemies for the sake of just not liking immigrants an opportunity to try to thwart the effort. But the governor then on the floor debate was when the attorney general sort of dropped the mic, for lack of a better term. And I remember vividly how it invigorated me, the sense of victory that I felt at that moment, because I knew that we had won this. I knew that at that point the governor was going to have to sign it. And he had always said that he would sign it if it came to his desk. But when the AG dropped it, that was the it moment, so to speak, when it all came together.
Less than an hour ago, the Attorney General, who I will say certainly is not a Supreme Court justice, the idea of Tish James in the Supreme Court is an interesting one, but she is currently the Attorney General of the state of New York, and that would mean that she is the highest ranked attorney for the state, and she put out a statement just a little bit ago, and I'm going to quote part of it. I support the green light bill, and the Office of the Attorney General has concluded that it is constitutional. It is, after all, the role of the Attorney General to do just that, to argue that it is constitutional. We will not opine on any actions the federal government may or may not take. The legislation is well crafted and contains ample protections for those who apply for driver's licenses. If this bill is enacted and challenged in court, we will vigorously defend it. Not only do I thank her for that, but would point out to some of my colleagues that might have been undecided or have even taken a position on the floor, you still have time to change your vote based on that.
Second, you mentioned the governor, and you know that morning he was on the radio and said that he had fears about unintended consequences of the legislation creating some sort of database that federal authorities could exploit.
That's a legal challenge, and I'm going to be asking the Solicitor General in the Attorney General's office, who does the legal opinions for the state of New York, to review the law and assure us that the federal government will not be able to access the information or subpoena the information.
Well, can they get that done before Wednesday?
Yeah, we will have a draft bill. And it's as simple as – well, it's not as simple as – but the Solicitor General will have to review the bill and make sure we're not creating a problem by what we're doing. And that's how the bill
so,
is written and constructed.
I mean, did you lose your mind when he went on the radio and said that all of a sudden on Monday morning when the vote was scheduled?
I can't tell you the words that I used when that came out. But suffice to say that I was borderline pissed, because we had spoken with the governor for some time about the bill. And from January till the end, we didn't get much feedback. Now, I can't sit here and say that the governor was being duplicitous or didn't support the bill. I don't know. I can't describe what his motivation was, but I wasn't happy that he raised this issue last minute. We kept hitting these walls and all these barriers, and that's when we reached out to certain legal minds in the AG's office, because we weren't going to be deterred. And so I wanted an argument. I wish I had gotten it before the debate, but hey, better late than never. And I think, that forced the governor's hand. If he had any thoughts about not signing it, which I don't think he did, but if he had any thoughts about not signing it, then I think the AG's announcement made it impossible for him to go any other way.
For anyone who was in the chamber when the vote happened in the Senate, I mean, there were two things that you had to kind of notice. One was Assemblywoman Catalina Cruz on the side and with some former staffers, current staffers, excuse me, watching what was going on. But the second thing was definitely, as you went to rise, there was, a 64th senator occupying your seat occasionally. Can you tell us a little bit about, who was there to watch the vote from your family and what that meant?
Yeah, sure. I was there with my wife was there. I'm sure you remember my child was there.
Yes.
Both my children, my oldest son, who's 27, and my youngest. Carolina Cruz is herself was one time an undocumented immigrant. Look, a lot of my colleagues are supportive. but some colleagues went the extra mile, and Carolina Cruz is one of them. So I was very proud to have her there. Assemblyman Phil Ramos was the guy that on Long Island, you know, he's surrounded by a sea of red. He was there every day doing what he had to do, so I was very proud that he was there. You know, people like Kevin Parker, who was very helpful at all times. I was there. Julia Salazar was very helpful. You know, people that did extra things to make sure that this passed and prioritized it on the floor of their obviously Carolina, her chamber, but in the Senate. But certainly, I was very happy to have her there with us. You know, these are the people that throughout the whole process you knew were there in the trenches fighting on their fronts. So I was happy that she was there. The only thing is she ruins one of my shirts because she's a crybaby. She's extremely emotional. She was crying. But I said,
there were some tears.
Back it. But she's great, so we love her.
And that's our show. My thanks to Senator Luis Sepulveda for providing a look behind the scenes on this legislative process. And thanks to WAMC for sharing that clip of the governor, which featured the podcast debut of Ian Pickus as well. If you enjoyed the podcast, please spread the word on Twitter, Facebook, and basically any social gatherings you may attend in the future. You can also leave us a rating and review wherever you download episodes. Until next time, podcast adjourned.
I tried to get you.
Ah, this day sucks.